The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. Now, Amy Markscore's Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Good morning, friends, and a good Friday to you. It is the Chris and Amy Show. You just heard that. Man, are we ready to go today or what? We got Hancock and Kelly sitting in with us. They always do on Friday mornings at 10 o'clock. They are kind enough to hang out for a little bit longer. I think they get no financial reward for doing so.
They do it out of just the kindness and benevolence of their own hearts, because they get nothing out of it.
Well, they get to hang out with us, as do you.
When you're not gallivanting around.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you weren't gallivanting today.
No gallivanting today.
Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, he is.
Don't worry about it.
It's going to be the original duo, Michael Kelly and Amy Markscore.
Don't worry about my gallivanting.
We'll be breaking down all the Super Bowl commercials and stuff.
Yep.
Let's hear from the people. 314-436-7900. We have an Odyssey app. That's the app that you use to listen to the show and the podcast and Cardinals baseball, all of that. And directly from the app, you can leave us a... Leave us a message. There's a little button that says send a message, record it, and send it to us, and give us your thoughts on whatever in the world is on your mind.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
A lot of changes happening in the new Trump administration, and here in the state of Missouri, it will become one of the first states to track immigration status in crime data. That's one thing that has been a pretty hot topic over the last few weeks.
And last night, Buffalo Bills QB Josh Allen won the NFL MVP award. Meanwhile, in Hall of Fame voting, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Torrey Holt was snubbed again.
Panthers beat the Blues last night 3-2. SLU men's basketball tonight. St. Joseph they will play. It's an 8 o'clock game, and we've got the broadcast right here on KMOX. So John Hancock and Michael Kelly are with us today. Fellas, I'm just going to say it now because you heard Amy mention it. Torrey Holt, not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's a travesty. You know, this is one of the all-time great receivers in NFL history. I do think there's an anti-St. Louis bias in the NFL.
Yeah.
But Torrey Holt belongs in the Hall of Fame. And you think about the number of Hall of Famers on that team. Isaac Bruce, Warner, Falk, Orlando Pace on the offensive line. Torrey Holt should be in there as well.
It's a real bummer, man. I mean, this is now, 11 years he's had to wait?
Yeah.
Which is, it's insanity.
And it appears as people who have had careers that are less than are getting in.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
It's weird that there's such an anti-St. Louis bias still, because, I mean, from the NFL standpoint, it's really just punching down at this point. Like, we're a mid-market, Midwestern team. You took the team from us. You dragged us through the gutters on your way out, and they're still punching down?
Well, I don't even know if it's that. I think maybe it's, well, they already have a bunch of Hall of Famers on that team, so we'll give some other players, another team's a look first.
We are the largest market in America without a National Football League franchise.
That is accurate.
You know, that's the first time I've gotten a gander of that Josh Allen all dressed up like that. That's a handsome fella.
Well, how do you think you got Haley Steinfeld?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm used to seeing him taking his helmet off and stuff. I've never seen him in a tuxedo and stuff. I thought, you know what, buddy, you're following that Tom Brady model.
Is that Jerry's daughter he's married to?
That's not that Jerry Seinfeld. No.
No.
Haley is an actor. She's an actor.
Oh, never heard
of
her.
What is she in?
She was most recently that I remember was in the Hawkeye show with Jeremy Renner. It's on Disney.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, so it's one of the Marvel. With him as a famous person?
Yeah, buddy. Jerry Seinfeld's daughter.
It's not Jerry Seinfeld's daughter.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
This is remarkable when you think about
it. Haley Steinfeld. Feld. It's not Seinfeld. Huh. There's a T in it.
Well, how'd she get that?
How do names work, John?
I don't know.
Nobody knows. But yeah, Josh Allen is a good looking fella. Yeah,
now there's a name. Now there's a name you can spell. There's a name you can spell. You like that? Yeah.
He looks young. He's got a baby face. Still.
Well, he is young.
Yeah.
Everybody's
I don't know.
Young.
I mean, like, I think when you're young and you have a baby face and you're in a tuxedo, sometimes it can be like 5% doofus.
5% doofus.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, maybe he'll be handsome in, like, 10 years. But I think he just looks too young.
But it is kind of cute when a little kid's got a tuxedo on, doesn't it?
Oh, it's really cute.
Yeah, you just want to go over and pinch your cheek. And,
yeah.
Come here, little guy.
To answer your question, she is also in Pitch Perfect 2.
Never saw
She's
it.
In Bumblebee. That's the Transformers movie.
She's not in, like, the biggest
movie.
That's
a good thing she married that quarterback.
She's in
True
Grit.
Career was going nowhere.
Is she married to him?
Yeah,
she's
married. They're engaged.
Are you not paying attention?
They are engaged.
I had no clue that
they're engaged.
She's a singer, too.
Yeah.
Oh, she's really? An actor and singer.
I'm with John, though.
Yeah. I mean, that career was not going anywhere.
It was a fine career, but she's not.
Yeah, no, she's doing okay.
She's not Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
No.
No.
I mean, she's still a name. People know who she is.
I never heard of her.
Not John.
Well, John, you didn't even know who the Beatles were the other day.
Oh, no, I know who doesn't. The Beatles are.
Help me, Rhonda. Didn't know what that was.
This guy who knows every song from World War II and around that era had never heard of Help Me, Rhonda, and I almost fell out of my chair.
PJ and I are good. The same. PJ and I are the same person. Yeah. Just with about a quarter
isn't
of a century.
The Beach Boys?
Who? Help Me,
Help
Rhonda?
Me,
yeah.
How can you not know the
He didn't know who.
Because you know some obscure music.
I do.
Right? For your age.
I just didn't know that one. That one slipped by me.
Huh.
I don't know how, though.
And I played it and wasn't all that impressed either.
I agree.
It's not a great song.
When Ron's played it for me, I didn't think much of it.
Did you guys see the movie? I forget what it's called, but...
Well, this is not helpful.
The premise is... The premise is the electric goes out worldwide, and in one moment... There was never a Beatles song.
Yesterday. Oh, it's,
yeah, yesterday.
Yesterday, okay. And when he's sitting there with his girlfriend, she's like, play something. And he's like, you know, he sings Yesterday to her. And then, like, they get mad at him. They're like, that's the greatest song ever. You know?
He's like, you guys don't know that? Yeah, that's a,
that's a great movie.
I love the premise of the movie.
It is. Mm-hmm. It needs to be redone. They didn't quite do it.
Well, they need to give it a different name so you'll remember what the heck the movie was called.
Yesterday. Buddy. How about Mr. Beast? Did you watch the latest episode of Mr. Beast?
Yeah, no.
Really? It's going to be not a $5 million prize this year. It's going to be a $10 million prize.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's news.
Good for him.
Who's he exploiting this time?
I got no problem with him. I think you guys, I don't think he's any worse than anybody else out there.
To Michael's point, because we've had this conversation a lot, it's just that since I don't watch television, I haven't watched any Survivor or Love Island or Bachelors in Paradise or Real Housewives. And when you start looking at some of those shows, I realize it's not so much that I hate Mr. Beast, it's I hate human nature.
Yeah.
It's so gross when you are willing to betray anybody, exploit yourself, like be embarrassed for money. It's just like this is what people will do for money. And really that's the whole premise of the game is how far will someone go? How far can you push someone to the point of emotional fatigue, mental fatigue, betraying your friends, breaking your promises for money?
Yeah.
And people will go very far.
See, that's the great thing about radio. None of us are doing this for money. And, you know, we're doing it because we love communicating with the folks out there.
You can always boil it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You're right, though. I think that makes radio a purer form of entertainment.
It's so pure. I mean, it's
almost volunteer.
We're the ivory soap of life over here. It's unbelievable. How are we doing, guys?
Oh, guys, we're doing great. We have a lot of stuff we want to get into with
stuff
the two of you.
And things.
Because this past week at City Hall was something. There was a lot going on this week and in state government too. So we're going to get to as much of it as we possibly can. And I think what we will do is use this moment right now to take a break so that we can come back and have a little bit of time to go over those things. Also, Amy has a letter.
I have a letter addressed to the four of us
that she would like to read.
That I'm going to get during and read it when we come back.
Do you know what it says?
I do. I'm okay. The only one who knows right. Was it what it says.
Yes.
Wow. Because there could be, typically a letter that has my name on it sent to KMOX is not saying pleasant things.
Yeah. No. And usually it's got white powder in it.
Hey now.
Not the good kind. Talk about anthrax. Talk about anthrax, Michael.
They're sending him cocaine?
John Hancock, Michael Kelly with Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Now it looks as though they're here to well, stay. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Yes, Ron?
No, go ahead.
Yeah,
no.
The St. Louis Board of
good.
Aldermen.
They met yesterday.
They did, and their troubles have not gone away. They really haven't.
Oh,
they're still dealing with the circus. But I feel we got a letter from John in St. Louis.
John?
It's a handwritten letter from John
right.
in St. Louis. And it was addressed to Amy, Chris, John, and Michael. I'm going to read it. It'll be our jumping off point for our Board of Aldermen discussion.
Are you going to point out grammatical errors?
There aren't any. It's actually pretty well
nice.
Written. And he has a masterful command of the English language.
Nice. Oh, lovely. Nice.
Dear Amy, Chris, John, and Michael, when the St. Louis Brain Trust is allocating the substantial Rams funds and match, they are forgetting to put anything in the largest category. Namely, graft, corruption, bribes, and waste. The people involved have neither the experience nor knowledge to manage projects of this magnitude. The results are going to be totally foobar. Sincerely, John. So, bring that up because I do think his cynicism, not necessarily the graft and corruption, but I do think his cynicism is felt across the city. Speaking of corruption, I will say that the attorney Hal Goldsmith was in attendance at one of the most recent
yeah.
Board of Aldermen meetings. And he, of course, it was the attorney who, the federal prosecutor, who put three Board of Aldermen, former Board of Aldermen, in federal prison. So, jumping off from John's letter, how do you feel about, what's your response to his letter?
I don't have to talk about the federal prosecutor. I'd prefer not to. I think his letter is probably an accurate reflection of where most of us are who've paid attention, and even those who've been peripherally paying attention feel that that's kind of what's going on in the city of St. Louis. And I think, you know, I think it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek about mm-hmm. corruption, et cetera. But he does point out in that letter that, you know, this is an organization that seems to be able to find a way to take care of itself but can't do the basics. And I think that's the sentiment that exists. As it relates to the federal prosecutor being at, or the federal investigator being at the Board of Aldermen, I can't recall any other time in my life where a federal investigator has been, and that wasn't by accident that he was spotted in the gallery. Mm-hmm. This wasn't a lowly FBI person. This is Hal Goldsmith. I mean, I just saw him immediately and walked the other way if I was there. I'm kidding. But but at the end of the day, I guess there was a statement being made. Whether or not that statement was to the local Board of Aldermen or whether it was to the federal administration, I don't know. I've never seen them in a meeting like that before. Have you?
No. You know, and there's always rumors in politics. You know, you hear every 2 or 3 years that the FBI is walking the halls of the
right.
state capitol. And so who knows? But I'd like us to pretend for a minute. Can we pretend?
I love pretending.
Because Tula and I, we pretend all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Should we get under the blanket?
No. But not with you, buddy. but let's pretend we had serious, effective leadership in mm-hmm. this city, okay? The mayor, the Board of Aldermen, people who are good at what they do, who have a wealth of knowledge, who have forged relationships throughout the community with all walks of life, including business leaders. This city could truly be transformed if that situation existed. And everything that's playing out in front of us right now underscores the fact that it's broken here and it's not getting better and it is getting worse. Fewer and fewer people are living here. It doesn't have to be this way. And this is a city that is a great city with a rich history, with many, many, many assets to it, that it wouldn't take that much to begin to infuse some confidence and trust and optimism in this community. And it's just regrettable to me that we're not there.
Yeah, I would add to that, I think there also needs to be an acceptance of the reality of where we are. I think far too often we as St. Louisans have this belief system that St. Louis is maybe a little bit larger than it is and that its predicament is not necessarily what we perceive it to be. And I think John's right. I think all the tools are here for us to make things work. But we've got to kind of accept that, like, we've got to get back to doing the stuff that's going to make St. Louis attractive. We can't solve some of these other things that we're looking at doing. I'm grateful they're not spending this money, you guys, because I just, it seems to me it would be smarter to be having this money being there to attract business than some of the stuff that they're talking about doing with it. And
daycare.
So, yeah, like daycare. I mean, I'm hopeful that there's going to be a reset after April when we'll get some fresh legislation and we're going to deal with the problems. I don't know how you can have a $400 million, $300 million pile of money in St. Louis City specifically and not a dime of it is going to public safety. Not a dime of it was going to be considered to go to public safety. How can that be? This is our brand, unfortunately, crime. Even if they don't believe it to be true, we have to push back at it and find a way to paint that narrative the other way, and ignoring it, not accepting our reality is not going to help.
Wherever there's poverty, there's going to be crime. So, but look at New Orleans. The crime rate in New Orleans is not appreciably different than the crime rate in St. Louis. Certainly, if you take the St. Louis metropolitan area, it's no different. There's a lot of crime in New Orleans, a lot of poverty in New Orleans, but New Orleans has the Super Bowl for the seventh time?
11th.
11th time. And people flock to it, and it's a destination
location. They get Final Fours. They get Sugar Bowls every year.
Yeah. It's a river town. You know, a little better climate, but, I mean, essentially it's got a wealth and rich musical heritage. So do we.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason St. Louis could not flourish. And we do some things so well. We do Mardi Gras so well.
Right. Soulard feels like New Orleans,
yeah.
Even when even when it's not Mardi Gras, you feel that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I don't know. I'm optimistic that things could change, but they're not changing in the short term.
It's devil's advocate because I've heard this argument. I believe from the mayor, but from city leaders that, well, you can't use the settlement money because it's one time money or ARPA funds, and how are you supposed to keep paying police officers or paying dispatchers with a one time sum?
Yeah, no, and that's a legitimate point.
Well, was daycare only going to be for a year?
Right, exactly.
That's a great point. That also is an ongoing payment.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, something I would advocate, when you look at police compensation, for example, the longer you're on the force, the more money you make. The longer you're on the force, the less time you're in the streets, typically. And some decent percentage of any police department are going to be desk jobs, people that are working in offices and aren't necessarily patrolling the street. They're the ones that make the most money. So what they've done in Hawaii, and I think it's a brilliant idea, is that they compensate their street-level officers with what they call hazard pay. So it's not on the pay scale, but it's an addition to the money that they're being paid now. That seems to make some sense to me. And it would also incent people joining a police force because they're going to be compensated at a very respectable level. Something like that, you know, could be very helpful in this town.
A text message into the show at 314-436-7900 says a city-county merger would be the first step to being a world-class city. Do you believe that?
Yeah, but I do think we ought to be, St. Louis ought to be St. Louis, and it ought to be a city of 1.2 million people, be the 10th or 11th largest city in the country. But there's no stomach for it right now. And while the dysfunction, and there's dysfunction in the city and the county, at least in the government sector, you're not gonna convince people or the majority of people in St. Louis that we're better off together. I don't think most people believe that right now. You've got to fix the structural problems that exist with the government. You got to have the right leaders in place. You got to get things moving in a positive direction. You've got to have a city that's solvent. when those things are in place, then I do think that's a natural progression of things, and I do think it would help.
Well, do you know, I think this, and you guys can disagree or agree with it, I my feeling is that we would start to move in that direction, maybe more quickly, if people in the county had actual skin in the game.
Well,
as opposed to it just being, well, I care about downtown St. Louis and the St. Louis City because we're close to it. If there's actual skin in the game and they get a say in what happens in St. Louis government, things might change very quickly.
Well, I'm going to go back to my original point, is that we also have to accept the reality of where we're at. And the biggest problem we have, this is the third time in my professional career that I've gone through this exercise of we need to merge the city and the county. The most glaring example being Better Together, because there was real money and resources behind it. But there was a Board of Freeholders effort, and now this discussion's happening again. And undoubtedly, I mean, the Better Together and the city-county stuff, it there's proof in concept. It's in Indianapolis. It's in Louisville.
The
cities that were just like us have resolved it. Unfortunately, Chris, I've seen this movie. I know how it ends. It's not going to be done. And the problem is on both sides. It's both a city problem and a county problem. You have a city that needs to accept its reality and that it needs help, and you have a county that needs to accept that they need that city. And right now, I'm telling you right now, in the blood of St. Louisans, the desire to keep Webster and Florissant and Warson Woods is stronger than the desire to see St. Louis grow as a region. And it's going to require us all letting down some guards. And for that matter, our friends on the other side of the river in St. Charles, too, need to get to their senses and realize they don't exist without St. Louis City and County.
Which I think Steve Ellman, to his credit, has said that.
Yep.
He's trying to bring recognition to that. He said, you may think St. Charles is fine. And he said, no, if the city is struggling, St. Charles will struggle, and we're already beginning to see that.
Yep.
Yeah. But the lack of desire to bring us all together in this, it's self-inflicted.
And it's the people.
It's holding us back.
It is regular people.
No doubt.
And if you threw open the phone lines right now about a city-county merger, the stuff that you would hear would turn your stomach. And until we get past all that and accept where we're at, this is what we're going to do.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly, Amy Markscores, Chris Ranji with you on KMOX.
Chris Ranji, Amy Markscores, we've got John Hancock and Michael Kelly, and we are talking about the city, and let's kind of work our way outward in concentric circles to the state, and that would be where we're at now with the state takeover of the St. Louis Police Department. John, I had asked you about the benefit of a state takeover, because looking at Kansas City and looking at their homicide rates being higher last year, I think on record, but the state controls the Kansas City Police Department. So why would a state control of St. Louis's police department be an improvement or be better?
Well, it's better. It's not a panacea, but it's better. And because right now you've got a mayor who appoints the police board who is not an advocate of supporting police. And so the one thing we know about the governor is that he's going to pick people, city residents. State takeover is kind of a misnomer. It's going to be a police board made up of St. Louis City residents. The difference is going to be that a majority of them now will be appointed by the governor, who is supportive of police, has the backs of police officers, and I think that's good. And fundamentally, I think the police board helps establish the policy of how you police. And it could result, I don't have any inside information, but it could result in having a stronger presence of police in the Central Business District, which I think would be a good thing. Because it's the crime in the Central Business District that takes place that I think keeps a lot of people from enjoying the amenities that we have here in the city.
Yeah. Look, I'm hopeful that I think a lot of people are living in the nostalgia of the old days. You know, like, boy, it didn't seem like we had much crime back in those days. But crime existed when the police was controlled by the state before. This is a bad policy at the end of the day, that cities wouldn't have control of its own assets. And, you know, while the mayor's making the right argument, she's the wrong messenger. She's the reason we're going to get local control of the police department. And I don't know that we'll that we're going to get state control of the police department. I don't know that we're ever going to get it back. So I've accepted that that's a reality, and I'm hopeful that a force that's down by 500 folks that have been defunded here in the last several years hopefully could get reinstated, and we can get some type of command and structure in the police department that brings some ease back to city residents. I'm a city resident. I haven't felt it yet. I hear what they're saying, that the crime numbers are going down, but I don't feel it yet. I still am apprehensive in what I experience out there. So, look, if the state's going to make it better, let's go.
John, you were saying, too, like, there was crime 10 years ago, but it wasn't necessarily in the heart of downtown at Enterprise Center right here on Market in the middle of the day.
You're going to have, you go to any city in the country, you're going to have crime. There's a lot of, any place where there's poverty, there's crime. And St. Louis is no different in that regard. What's different here is that, at least by perception, there's so many shootings happening in the downtown business district where people go to baseball games and hockey games and different things. And you got to clean that up, you know, and you've got to to clean it up, you've got to have a presence of police officers on the streets.
And I think that's where the argument is falling flat in Jefferson City as a pushback when we're saying that crime's going down, because, guys, it was just 4th of July. Do you remember when we were on the radio after 4th of July and it looked like we had, you know, Bogota going on in downtown St. Louis, people running around with armed guns, shooting them up, etc. And this has got to be changed. The state's going to take it. I don't know how the governor's going to fix this problem. I mean, I think there's this belief system that suddenly the state's going to be able to alleviate these problems. And I think they've got, I think this is far deeper than just who sits on the police board of what needs to be adjusted.
What do we, it's escaping me now. Did we not pass that? It would be the city law that would allow police officers to stop somebody who's walking around open carrying an underage person. Remember this?
Right.
This was a whole thing last year in the state.
And then it's combated by the state. Yeah, man, that's part of what Mike Kehoe's going to have to
deal with.
So
maybe they could pass some laws that might actually help the police in St. Louis.
And that's one of the big problems, I believe, from a state perspective, is that there's not an understanding in our legislative body right now of the of course, there's representatives, but the preponderance of those who are in charge right now don't have an understanding to what life is like in St. Louis and Kansas City. They view guns as something they go shoot their deer with and run around with, and don't think of it in the way that we deal with it in the city of St. Louis. I think that's the bridge that Mike Kehoe can hopefully bridge for us, because it's irrational, the policies that come out of Jefferson City as it relates to dealing with St. Louis.
Who did we... Ranj, I am having the worst mind blank, but we talked to someone. I asked about this issue, and they were afraid that stop and frisk would be reinstituted if the state took over. Is that something that's relevant or no?
No, you'd have to have police present.
But
to
I think the way the law is now, you can just walk around with it out in the open.
Yeah, open
and they
carry.
Can't stop you.
That's right.
Yeah, and but I mean,
they can't even stop you and ask you what you're doing with it.
Right.
I'm just ready to be seeing officers again. And look, I see them in certain spots of the city, and then there's other places that you're like, boy, it just doesn't seem like there's any of them here.
Yeah, I think my main – well, there are a couple of issues here. One is Kansas City, as Amy brought up. They're not doing great in terms of crime, and that's a state they are in control of it. And secondly, if there has been progress in terms of the numbers, and we've had Chief Tracy in here a couple of times talking about – how the numbers are better, how they are recruiting more officers, and that of course takes time, and they're seeing officers who had left the force come back. And it seems like with progress going in the right direction, I don't know if I'm necessarily on board with hindering that in any way. And shaking things up if the progress is going.
But
the right
I don't
way.
Think that people believe progress is going in the right direction when the same people who are telling us that crime is going down are the ones who are telling us had no idea that there was ice on the streets, et cetera. You know what I'm saying? It's adding
all feel,
up.
And I hate making decisions on feel.
But that's what's going to happen.
Needs to be, decisions like this need to be made on numbers,
but
not feel.
Much like Donald Trump. To Mike Kehoe's credit, he has said since the day he ran that this was what he was going to do. He's not hid it from anybody. He said he was going to be a law and order governor, and he said specifically, because it was a major political statement for a Republican to come out and say, hey, I'm going to go against this policy that was funded in the past by a Republican donor. Yep. Who says I'm going to overturn this. So the governor owns this sucker lock, stock, and barrel. I hope he can fix it. And I think that we're all hoping he will. I am.
Bringing up Donald Trump, just I do want to jump over to Washington.
Lock, stock, and barrel. Did you hear that?
I got a dumb reference.
You wouldn't understand, Hancock.
Jumping over to Washington for a second, because we've seen a lot of action from Donald Trump, and whether it's the CIA buyouts or wanting to cut the federal budget. And I guess I have a question with the legality of a president making some of these decisions, especially when it comes to spending. Congress has the power of the purse. These are congressionally appropriated funds. They've already passed through Congress. Does the president have the power to just say, we're not spending that money? I thought that's not how it worked.
No, he doesn't. And it's going to be tested in court. The fundamental problem is the legislative branch of our government is severely broken right now. And they're providing virtually no check or balance on executive power. And it doesn't put Donald Trump out of the equation. That's been the case for a while. And the judicial branch is there, but it's slow. So now you've got an executive that doesn't have a real legislative check on it, doing things that clearly, in my estimation, are not constitutional. And eventually, the court's going to find that. But what's going to happen in the intermediary time? A lot.
The part I don't like about it, none of this is a surprise. I mean, the Project 2025 got a lot of attention, but I've actually gone and read it since the election. I can confess I didn't read it before the election. It's all right there. This is all designed what's happening. The good thing for us is it's only a 180-day plan. I don't know if there's a second part to it or not, but it's only the first 180 days, and this is what they're up to. They're going to break these systems down, and I think he's banking on the fact that the courts will take forever and that the Republicans will fall on their sword for him for a while. I think he ultimately knows he's going to lose, but the destruction and will ultimately accomplish the goal even in defeat, if that makes sense.
I think part of the challenge is that you do have a lot of the electorate that is cheering this stuff on.
Yeah.
They're cheering on the shutting down of USAID, even though they probably didn't know what it was a week ago, or, purging the FBI or trying to purge the FBI, CIA, all these different things. I don't know if people really understand what would happen if some of these organizations went away or were gutted.
Well, they're going to. And I think the best argument against all this is, fine, y'all voted for Donald Trump to do this. Who gave the world's richest man the keys to the building? And why is he getting to make these decisions? He's not elected. He hasn't been even vetted. He has conflicts of interest. That, to me, is the biggest problem. That Donald Trump's going to ruin the Department of Education. He's going to do the same thing the Department of Education he did to USAID. Nothing's going to stop him. The courts may eventually stop him 2 years from now, but in the meantime, he's going to put it into
We do not have a conservative party in this country. And a conservative party would say foreign aid is a vitally important part of our national security. It's how we maintain relationships in the world. It's how we influence what happens in the world. It's how we are engaged in the world. That's not what's happening.
Yeah. And also, Donald Trump is only going to be here so long. And eventually, we're going to have a Democratic president. We're going to have a president who disagrees vehemently with Project 2025. And now all the restraints have been taken off. You've broken down the institutions that are there to be cumbersome, to be governing, to have a restraining element in order that we don't just swing the country back and forth based on vindictive ideological viewpoints. So you want Elizabeth Warren to have this power? You want AOC to do all of these things carte blanche like Trump is?
Or George Soros. How would it be any different than Elon Musk? Yeah, being able to go in there and do it. Donald Trump isn't going to be president forever.
Yeah.
And he may not even be president for 4 years. Who knows? But some we're going to live with the consequences of what he's up to, and you're foolish to think that the Democrats aren't going to come in and do the same thing.
Which is
to the
scary
things that
for, yeah,
the Republicans
scary, yeah.
care about.
And if I were them, I would.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, agricultural subsidies, I'm going to pay you to not farm?
You think they're not going to overcorrect?
Let's have more this than you debate want on wasting yeah. money in this country. Guess who ultimately gets hurt? It's the people who live in the red states.
Snooker today?
No snooker today.
Oh,
what?
What?
I have meetings today, but we are going to go spend a little time together.
Who does meetings on a Friday?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that your meeting shirt?
No, well, I'm actually going to a funeral home, so I have to go home and change. And after
that's a
I
weird place to meet.
Like, well, it's not. I was just being appropriate. That,
I see.
You know. Sorry.
But I have to go to a funeral home, and so I don't get to spend all my day with Hancock.
That's sad.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry.
It happens.
It does. To everybody.
Yeah.
John Hancock.
Before I leave, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Probably the Chiefs.
Amy?
Yeah.
Probably.
The Chiefs.
Fly, well, I mean, Eagles fly.
What?
Yeah, I mean, they're,
come on.
They're already going to play 20-on-11, so.
Yeah.
They got all the officials. Oh. They got all the officials in their pockets.
You're nuts.
Yeah.
You're nuts. Don't be one
all
of those
these, all these anti-
It's really, it's hard to beat Patrick Mahomes and all the stripes.
No, all these anti-Chiefs
people. He's one of these drone goofballs,
all you need to do is meet some Eagles fans. You will change your mind.
Are you looking at this? It's coming up next.
Did you see this next, John?
Now, did you see this? With Chris and Amy.
Hey, Ronj, I don't know if you saw this, but the CEO of Anheuser-Busch wants to ditch the term domestic for American because people don't salute the domestic flag. The CEO said,
Wait, who wants to do this?
The CEO of Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
He wants Budweiser, Michelob, Ultra, and Busch Light to say American instead of domestic beer. He talked about the pride we take in our country. They do note, though, that some Budweiser labels do already say, like, Great American Lager, or they note brewed and bottled in the USA. But basically, anywhere on the bottle or the labels where it says domestic beer, they want to say American beer because the CEO said it's just it's putting a patriotic stamp on things.
Huh. I mean, whatever. I don't know. It seems like a little pandering, but okay, it's fine, I guess.
It's one of those things that doesn't matter, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, it doesn't
but
really
like,
at
I guess
all.
If you're in the news, I did think like, oh, Busch Light, I haven't had one of those, so.
It could be that simple
yeah.
where you're putting it in people's minds and it's free advertising because people are going to talk about it.
Because it's not like Budweiser has ever backed down from the patriotic side of things, right? Because they have the Folds of Honor, they always have like the camo bottles. They have American flags. So they're, to me, AB has always been very America forward. But I guess now it will just say American beer instead of domestic. Or at least that's what he wants.
Yeah, well, maybe he's accomplishing a goal in getting a little bit of added advertising without having to pay for it. Which is cool.
Or it's just like things are going well. So it's like, well, we've got time. What else do we want to do? You know, that's the kind of thing when you're just looking at details. Oh, what if we did this?
Did you see that former Rams running back, St. Louis Rams running back, Marshall Faulk?
I did see this.
He is now working for Deion Sanders' staff in Colorado. He is the new running backs coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, the college team that Deion Sanders is the head coach of. Warren Sapp is also helping out that program as well. But Marshall Faulk has a running backs coach job. And maybe he would be a good coach. I don't know. He was very good at the position.
He was very good at the position. I don't
know.
Won
an MVP.
Did he play there in college?
Colorado?
Yeah.
No. He played it. Was it?
Maybe they're buds.
I keep wanting to say Jackson State, but that's not right.
Maybe he's buds with Deion Sanders. I mean, obviously.
San Diego State.
San Diego State.
Yes.
James O'Sullivan.
Yep.
There you go.
There you go.
All right.